Hello and welcome to the PC Gamer Podcast. This is episode number 121 for February 22nd, 2008. First off, the cast and crew of the PC Gamer podcast formally apologizes for delivering this week's piping hot bag of microwavable insight. A day late, but it was, after all, a busy week at GDC. That's the Game Developer Conference here at the Moscone Center in San Francisco. And when we got back, the keys to the office weren't underneath the flower pot where we left them, so we all went home. But now we are back, and I'm your host, Logan Decker, and I'm joined today by Senior Associate Editor Dan Stapleton.
I just ate an apple.
Magical intern Norman Chan.
Nuts.
Podcast producer Andy Bauman.
Here.
And we have a very special guest with us today, Maximum PC Editor-in-Chief and my former boss, Will Smith. Give it up, guys.
Yay. Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
That was, what was...
You don't have to scream, Norm.
I'm just saying
that you are leader of the B team. Remember that episode where we had the B squad?
The hell do you mean the B team?
Yeah, that was kind of hurtful.
Who was the number one medic on the PCG US versus UK match? That's all I'm asking.
What was it, me?
He did get you there. Anyway, before this gets out of hand, I just want to let everybody know, in case you're wondering, former PC Gamer Editor-in-Chief Gary Gazwitta will not be joining us for the rest of his life. Just kidding. I couldn't resist a Hans Gruber quote. No, Gary will be spending the next 6 weeks in his Speedos by the poolside in L.A. developing the script to the now officially announced live-action adaptation of Akira.
Akira!
I don't want to imagine Gary in a Speedo doing anything.
the internet's already pissed off about that, but I'm really excited. I'm happy for Gary. I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, even if it doesn't come out, you know, the way the fanboys like, you can't really blame the writer that much because the producers and everybody really manipulate the hell out of the script. I know the Wachowskis, like the first movie they did was Assassins. And they wanted to get their names taken off of it because it was so bad they had been manipulated, which strangely they didn't do for the second and third Matrix movies. But whatever.
I wonder.
Joss Whedon wrote Alien 4, the Alien Resurrection, and that came out terrible, and he hates it.
Wow.
But does
that
he hate
was,
it?
That was old.
No, because that movie's pretty awesome, dude. I don't know what you're talking about.
However, if the movie comes out great, then Gaz gets all the credit.
Can we cut the producer's mic, or is that... Yeah. Can we do that? No? All right, I'm sorry.
I wonder if he can write himself in the credits as PC... Or, Gary Whitta of PC Gamer Podcast fame.
I don't know if the writer gets to write the
credits. Send him a memo and see if he'll get on that.
Yeah.
It does give me a hearty vote of confidence to know that they would like to split the movie into two parts. But that can only bode well for a story that's pretty... broad in scope. So anyway, best of luck to you, Gaz, and we're all thinking of you, even if you're not thinking of us, because you're surrounded by really attractive people. Anyway, as we said before, this week was GDC in San Francisco, and we were all there. Any impressions, folks?
PC gaming's doomed.
Disarray.
Yeah, well, I mean, there weren't a whole lot of announcements. I mean, total. I mean, the only real announcements was Gears of War 2 for 360.
Portal
outside
2.
Of that, what else? Portal 2. Well, that wasn't intentionally announced.
It was not announced.
That's true. It was not announced. Yeah. But I mean, like there were very few announcements on the whole. So, I guess if you count the Portal 2 announcement, that's huge.
Very much so.
I was going to say, they did announce the formation of the PC Gamers Alliance, or PC Gaming Alliance. Right. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Anybody excited?
I don't know what to think about that. I mean...
It's a little early to say.
I didn't hear a lot of concrete goals. I didn't...
Explain what it is to people who don't know what it is.
Do you want me to take it?
Yeah.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Okay. PC Gaming Alliance or Gamers Alliance, or the PCGA is what they're calling it, is basically, it like Norm said, it's like the Super Friends. It's Microsoft, Intel, NVIDIA, AMD, Epic. Am I missing somebody? I feel like I'm forgetting somebody. And they're basically, they've teamed up as, you know, put their enemy status aside to promote PC gaming, is the thought. The problem is, like, their goals are kind of vaporous, and I mean, it's unclear exactly what the goals are. They had a couple of things that they talked about that we can get into in a second, but I mean, it's kind of amorphous in the same way that, like, the whole Games for Windows thing was about 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago.
It's
and look how that's worked out. So we've got to be cautiously optimistic about these things. You know, we can't say, oh, this is here to save us, because, first of all, we don't need that much saving. Second of all, it might not do anything.
Well, that was kind of the interesting thing is, I mean, part of their message is that we don't really need saving, that the dire, you know, the dire description of what's happening with PC gaming isn't as bad as the media actually makes it out to be. Partly because the sales figures are a little bit misrepresented, and partly because the console numbers are maybe a little bit inflated. So, yeah.
Right, and there were those three kind of, like, sort of discouraging you know, interviews with Cliffy B, Chris Taylor, and Peter Molyneux saying, "Oh, PC gaming's in disarray," and, you know, which some people took to mean, oh, PC gaming is dead or domed again, you know.
There were different reasons.
It was a gross misquote quotation, but yeah, and Chris Taylor was saying that it's getting kind of hard because of piracy.
His deal wasn't that people don't play games on the PC; it's that people don't buy games on the PC.
Right. So. And you know, even in his case, you know, people say, oh, you know, Chris Taylor's giving up on the PC. That's not true. He's got two games in development with PC leads. You know, there's Space Siege and Demigod. You know, and he's pretty much risking his company on, or maybe not risking his company, but taking a big chance on Demigod with self-publishing a PC only game. That's a huge risk, which implies he has some faith in the PC.
I mean, one of the things that I'm taking away from all of these conversations is that I think that the day of the PC exclusive AAA, you know, $30 million development cost title is probably over. I mean, I don't think anybody can afford to release a game unless it's a first party console game on just one platform.
StarCraft 2.
I think that's true. StarCraft 2 is special. I mean, Blizzard is the exception. Valve.
Then there will be. I mean, there's still going to be those star titles that will excel, you know, most likely RTS games, MMOs, just on the PC. And I don't think any games cost $30 million. I know you're exaggerating there, but...
Well, I mean, WoW costs
will be high-budget games.
Arguably, MMOs are costing $30 or $40 million to develop 2 or 3 years ago. WoW was rumored to be a $40 million game, as was EverQuest 2. That, you know, worked out one of the parties involved.
Check out what... Stardock is saying, you know, upon all this commentary about piracy and, oh, we can't sell games on the PC. If you go to the Sins of a Solar Empire website, they say, for console advocates out there, ask yourself how well a given game would sell if it required players to run out and buy a $300 upgrade to their console to play the game. That's essentially what a lot of high-profile PC game developers expect. When Ironclad and Stardock were working on Sins, we made a conscious decision that the game would not require potential gamers to upgrade their systems. That meant we couldn't have things like moving turrets or whatever, but it means that the size of the market was much larger. No matter how good your game is, if people can't play it, you will always be limited. The number of people willing to upgrade PCs for games is not that large. If you want to sell lots of copies, make sure it runs on a lot of machines. Now, to me, that's a great response from somebody whose first instinct is not to whine.
Right, and that's also, you know, Blizzard's outlook is to make games that run on a you know, broad spectrum of platforms.
Well, and Valve. I mean, Valve, look at what CS Source...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Right, but on the other hand, when Half-Life 2 first came out, Source was a pretty hefty engine.
It scaled well. I mean, that's the thing, is you could play Half-Life 2 on a GeForce 5700, probably the worst card that NVIDIA has released in the last 10 years, and it worked okay. It didn't look as good, and it was, you couldn't run it at a high resolution, but you could play the game.
But isn't that the same thing as Crysis?
Well, Crysis, arguably they made some marketing issues when they were pitching Crysis around as the most demanding game ever made and all that jazz.
I don't think there's anything wrong with like the people who upgrade just for games, though. I think there is a good market.
Oh no,
that.
We love them.
I love that.
Those
I
are
am that guy.
Best friends, yeah.
Right. I mean, you know, I've tons of games. I think everybody on this podcast has probably.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. I did get a chance to talk with Alex St. John at GDC. St. John is the CEO of the gaming company Wild Tangent. They're known for non-threatening casual fare like Diner Dash as well as Fate, a pretty addictive, accessible RPG if you can do without the feature film quality cutscenes and the inevitable Uwe Boll adaptation. Alex St. John is one of the pivotal geniuses that who were cruelly overlooked by the Nobel Prize Committee for working on DirectX way back in the mid-90s. Now he's the CEO of Wild Tangent, and they were at GDC announcing the Wild Tangent Orb, which it's calling the industry's first PC game console for enthusiast gamers. I'm not really a big fan of that tagline. I don't really know what it's supposed to mean, and I'm an enthusiast gamer. But as I said, I was able to talk directly to Alex St. John, and after thinking about it for a while, I realized that what Wild Tangent is saying is that it's doing now what Microsoft should have gotten off its bitch ass and done a year ago. In a word, and that's to come up with a way to help make PC gaming as idiot-proof to use as a console system without abandoning all the advantages of PC gaming, namely
the awesome games, the graphics.
It's like what? I'm sorry?
It's like the Phantom, then. It's just a PC in a box.
It's a little different from that, but we'll get into the details in a sec. So here's the takeaway on the Wild Tangent Orb. If you buy a new PC this year, there's a good chance that the Wild Tangent Orb will already be installed on it. If not, you can just download it this coming April and install it on your own. Then you can start downloading AAA games Steam style and just start playing them for free. I'm not talking about Diner Dash here, although let's not forget that Wild Tangent does make Tornado Jockey one of my favorite games. Sierra and THQ have already signed up, so you can play Company of Heroes, Opposing Fronts, or Juice 2, for example, for free as long as you're willing to sit through an introductory ad from Sprint, who's going to be the first sponsor for free play on the Wild Tangent Orb. So, dig it. After the commercial, that's it. Your game won't be interrupted for a message from ExxonMobil or whoever, and you can play as long as you want. Now, if you want to play with commercials, you can do that too. All you have to do is purchase some wild coins in advance, and it'll cost, I think he said, somewhere around 40 or 50 cents per session, and the session can be as long as you want. And as he put it to me, what do we care how long a player enjoys the game for each session? The business model is based around games being accessible, easy to get, easy to sample, and easy to get addicted to. And it all happens on a system that you already own. So that's pretty cool, especially when you contrast it with, you know, the business model they have on the console side, which is you have to pay $300 to $600 for the console itself. Oh, and don't forget the cables and the extra controller and the extended warranty if you bought the Xbox 360. Then you spend $50 to $60 per game, hoping against hope that at least one out of maybe five or six might actually live up to the hype. But if none of them do, tough. You bought them, you own them, you can't take it back. That's what my dad used to call an unacceptable situation.
The one thing I have to say about that is most games put out demos, though. You know, so at least on the PC. And increasingly on the consoles, there's a demo, so you can get a sense of a game before you buy it.
Play the entire game all the way through?
I do like that idea where I can pay 50 cents and play a sitting or two. If it looks like a game, it's going to take me a weekend to beat. I'm only going to start it five or six times. That's a great idea. It's a great situation for me. I don't know how developers are going to like that actually, because or publishers in particular, because they won't be getting as much money out of me.
I think over the long term, they just might, a big part of their business model is sort of this rent-to-own model, where if you, pay out so much money to play this game over a period of months or, even a year, you will eventually own the game. And get this, they will actually burn the contents at any time you tell them to onto a DVD and mail it out to you Netflix style. Whoa!
That is pretty cool. I mean, one thing that people have a problem with Steam is that if you wipe your computer, you have to download everything again. Although you can burn your own DVD backups of your Steam games.
That doesn't work anymore. Yeah. They broke
so
that.
Really?
It,
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Did they break it on purpose, or is it?
I don't think it was on. I think it's just kind of a neglected thing, because what most people do is just back up their GCF files. But Gordon down here bitches about that on a fairly regular basis.
but it's still an equivalent system, yeah.
Yeah. And another thing, you know, I haven't seen the presentation, so I don't really know what this looks like, but I'd be worried that the application would be, you know, kind of a resource hog style kind of thing. I mean, you don't know.
That's,
you know.
Yeah, Steam is true.
Steam kind of started out that way. With this new version they just put out, it's much, much faster to start up and to pop up.
Right.
But
much less memory intensive as well.
Right. So, and you know, that's what I'd be, you know, really concerned about is something that's big and clunky, and, you know, trying to deliver ads and, you know, sucking up bandwidth for like ads or something like that, or, you know, so we'll have to wait and see how this turns out.
No, absolutely.
I mean, it's worth mentioning that Wild Tangent has had problems being classified as spyware in the past.
Right, right. They used to be bundled. They used to be with AOL Instant Messenger. Right.
Right. Well, they were bundled with a lot of stuff, but yeah, AOL was the notable one.
Right. And then that was kind of annoying. I remember, you know, struggling to uninstall that without breaking AIM. I finally switched over to Pigeon. That solved that problem. But
wow.
But yeah, I'm
hoping that the guy who pried Microsoft away from DOS will be able to get this one right.
Yeah. Oh, I should mention I just got out of a meeting just before this podcast. I had a meeting with Dr. Ray Muzica, or Muzica, how do you pronounce it? Muzica. He's from BioWare.
Right.
He's one of the co-founders. And you know, I asked him what he thought about the comments from Cliffy B and Chris Taylor and Peter Molyneux, and he completely disagreed with it. He said, you know, he thinks the future of PC gaming is bright. He thinks that it's not necessarily going to be the same as it was. You know, he said, you know, you can't drive a car by looking in the rearview mirror. You've got to look ahead, not behind you. But
nice.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, he's quite a talker.
Peter Molyneux didn't say that PC gaming is dead, but they said was disarray, and that just means it's confused right now. I mean, it's in a state of flux.
But both Peter Molyneux and Cliffy B cited The Sims and WoW as, you know, being a bad thing for the industry. Ray said he thinks it's those are actually good things because people are actually playing games on the PC, and that's, you know, where they go for their gaming. So that can only be a good thing for the PC. And you know, so what if people are playing a subscription model game? You know, that's still money coming into the PC gaming industry. So, you know, he has a very different view on things, and he's very optimistic. And he said they wouldn't be you know, putting a bunch of effort into putting Mass Effect on the PC and, you know, modifying the interface to play well on the PC. And I saw a demonstration of that, which, you know, it looks like they're doing a great job, by the way. So he said they wouldn't be putting all that effort into doing that if they didn't think there was a large audience for it on the PC that, you know, that cares about gaming.
And, you know, Doug Lombardi, in an interview I think we read today, he revealed, like, some sales numbers for the Orange Box for PC. Not the exact numbers, but he gave us a good idea of what they were, and they were very strong. He said that on consoles, on the 360 and PS3 combined, Orange Box would top out at around 1.5 million copies. It's sold, I think, like 1.2 on Xbox and a couple hundred thousand on PS3. But on PC, it sold much more than that. He couldn't say exactly how much more, but at least in the double digits, percentage-wise, more.
Well, but Orange Box was very much a lead PC title, and one of the things that I was most excited about in Orange Box, which is TF2, is frankly pretty crappy on PS3 and Xbox. So,
well, a fast-paced shooter is going to be crappy on a console.
Yeah, of course, of course.
I've never tried playing that game on a console, and I guess Norm, you played it a little bit at before it came out. We were at an EA event, and you were trying to play Team Fortress on a control pad.
Yeah, it had fewer players back then. I mean, everything's exactly the same. And you know, and they're developing Left 4 Dead right now, they're working. I mean, it's going to come out day and date, I think, with the 360 version, and because that's a very fast-paced multiplayer shooter. They're actually, I think, toning some of it down. Or not toning it down, but they're tweaking it so it's going to be the same game on both platforms, but will still be fun to play.
Yeah, OXM just did a cover story on it. And then in there they say they weren't letting OXM play the game. You know, even though it was fully playable, they weren't letting them play it because everything was way too hard and the humans didn't stand a chance, which you've got to assume means they, you know, have to tone it down so, you know, consoles can aim and shoot better.
Well, I mean, that's just a balance issue, though, really.
Right.
I mean, the thing is, simultaneous development is definitely good for us because we'll see more AAA titles on the PC than we would if people had to develop them exclusively for consoles. Yeah. I mean, exclusively for the PC, rather.
Anyway, as long as they put some effort into a port, I'm all for ports. Like Fallout 3, you know, the Xbox is the lead development platform on that. In conversations we've had with Bethesda, they've said, you know, the PC is maybe a month behind in development, but they're still planning a simultaneous release. They're putting a lot of effort into the PC interface. So, you know what? That's fine. I'm happy with that.
You have a couple different scenarios, right? You have Fallout 3 where it's simultaneous release, but not the same development team.
It is the same development team. It's all Bethesda.
But it's still technically a port because they're gonna they develop on one platform first and then go to the other, right? Which is different from like a game like Rainbow Six where it's simultaneous development and they basically didn't port any of the new stuff over. They didn't tweak it for the PC. They just put the Xbox stuff on the PC, which is all different from the Gra 2 stuff, which is two different games at all. Are completely.
Well, I still don't think that's quite an accurate description of what they're doing with Fallout 3. They're developing it on both platforms at the same time. They've just got slightly more resources in the Xbox version. So they're developing the resources, you know, all the models and everything that works on both platforms. So it's just a simple matter of the coding, and you know the interface design. So I guess they probably have specific people working on that, but I don't think that it's accurate to say that they're developing it first on Xbox and then porting that over to the PC.
I mean, BioShock and COD were the same. They were the same as Fallout, and they were simultaneous development, and it wasn't. It was more or less the same teams working on both versions of the game, where it makes sense. So,
I mean, we obviously would prefer that it's the PC's the lead platform.
Right. Well, I mean, you either way, you kind of get the same downsides to it. Like, because if you're going to have the same game on PCs and consoles, some of the more complex things we used to see on PCs, you don't see on the consoles because their controls are a little bit more simplified. But so it's not quite as complicated, or maybe not quite as deep. But that doesn't mean it's not fun.
As long as the UI and the controls work, I don't have any problem at all. I mean, I'm if the game BioShock's a perfect example. They added that awesome quick weapon switcher. They made the inventory stuff a little bit easier to use. I mean, I was really thrilled. I thought that the PC version was superior to the Xbox. Oh, and they did graphic tweaks. But I don't know.
Said the same thing more than that. They said the same thing about Mass Effect. They're saying that's going to be a better game on the PC because they've done things like increase the texture resolutions and refine the interface. Listen to some feedback. They tweaked the controls on the vehicle, which the name of it escapes me, but it's this big vehicle you drive around.
The Mako.
These games we've mentioned, they're all Unreal Engine 3, which has kind of emerged as the de facto cross-platform engine. It's been really easy for developers to port from one, to do simultaneous development, right, with Fallout 3 or with BioShock, which is actually pretty different from like a couple of years ago when like Rainbow Six Vegas and the last Splinter Cell came out. Remember how bad that was on the PC because it just wasn't optimized.
So back to the PC Gaming Alliance for a moment here, now that we're talking about whether or not the PC gaming situation is in disarray. Can you give us a little more of the meat on what the PC Gaming Alliance was telling folks this week, Will?
Well, so I sat down with Kevin Ungangst. I think that's how you pronounce his name. I always muck it up. But he's the guy in charge of games for Windows for Microsoft, which is kind of a challenging position, I think. But we talked because they're a member of the PC Gaming Alliance thing, and I mean the goals are kind of vaporous now, but they do have a couple of things that I think are pretty valuable. One of the big things that they want to do is make sure that sales numbers are accurately reported, because what they're saying is the manufacturers and the software developers are seeing growth in PC games. But it's not being reported accurately, and it doesn't compare correctly to consoles because, PC game sales reporting doesn't include online sales. It doesn't include stuff like WoW revenue. We know that. It also doesn't include hardware sales. So if I go out and buy a $6,000 Voodoo PC that pretty much the only thing I'm going to use that for is gaming. You don't need a quad SLI system for you know, video editing.
YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, right, exactly. then, I mean, I'm buying that machine. It's for gaming. On the console side, when somebody buys an Xbox 360, that counts toward their year-end revenue. When somebody buys the Xbox webcam, that counts toward year-end revenue. When they buy an extra controller, that counts toward revenue. When they buy a Rock Band set, a Rock Band guitar, that counts toward revenue. But, you know, gaming video cards, gaming speakers, gaming headsets, gaming rigs,
boards.
You know, $1,000 CPUs don't count in that same category. So I don't think they know what the solution is, but they want to either work with MPD to report more accurate PC game sales information or start reporting that stuff independently. And the analogy that he gave was to the CEA, which is the Consumer Electronics Association. And they do things like tell you how many DVD players have been sold and how many HD DVD players and how many Blu-ray players and cell phones and stuff like that. So that seemed pretty useful. The other thing that he talked about that was interesting was the copy protection problem. Mm-hmm. And not from a stopping pirates concern, but more that publishers are letting copy protection impact the gaming experience negatively. So, yeah. You know, BioShock was the example we talked about. I went and bought a copy of BioShock on disk. It didn't work on my PC. I couldn't make it work because it didn't like my optical drive. And I was out $50 because I couldn't return the game to Best Buy or GameStop because they don't take PC games back.
And Gary would have had the same problem.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a situation that, I mean, I remember Gary was really pissed off about it. I mean, no normal consumer is probably never going to buy another PC game if that happens. I mean, I wouldn't want to take a $50 risk. And I mean, so they want to work with the people in the industry to kind of educate the publishers that, hey, this is a really bad thing. And there's actually a dollar cost to this, and you need to, you know, it needs to make sense. You need to be smart about it. So,
well, that's a pretty concrete goal.
Yeah, if they can actually pull that off, great. I'm all for it.
Right. Whether they can pull it off is the big question, right? I mean, they've been around for a year and a half, and they're just now announcing that they exist and they have a name. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Also, after the Windows gaming, you know, initiative kind of you know, totally fell apart, I'm hesitant to put a lot of faith in anything Microsoft is all on board for. But I mean, at least they've got, you know, NVIDIA, who has a very vested interest in selling these cards, and the ATI, AMD, and Intel. You know, they all want to sell PC hardware.
I mean, the Games for Windows Live thing has totally fallen apart. But I think, I mean, Games for Windows is not a, I wouldn't call it a rousing success, but I don't think it's been a complete disaster. I mean, what we kind of hoped it would be.
It's important to know what the differences are, you know, Games for Windows. And I mean, they're definitely tied together, but Games for Windows Live and Games for Windows are different things. One's a branding initiative, right, and one's a software platform.
Right. But I mean, I don't think the branding initiative has been a disaster in that it has hurt anything. I don't think it has accomplished anything.
I would have to agree with that.
I mean, they've done 64-bit Windows testing. That was the one positive I was able to come up with off the top of my head. So if you're running 64-bit Windows, your games work now, which didn't ever happen before. Games for Windows made that a kind of important concern. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely weak benefit, if any.
You know, I'm sorry. I just have to bust in right now and say that... what is it?
AudioSurf?
Oh my god, I just totally screwed that up. Yeah, AudioSurf. Is that it?
Yeah.
Yep.
The thing I was playing all week?
It's awesome.
That's fantastic. you can get it off Steam. Go. What are you listening to this podcast for? Stop.
There's
everything.
Even a demo.
Drop, hey, you know, everything.
That's a good question. Could you put a podcast into AudioSurf?
Yeah, it's no fun. It was an unmitigated disaster.
Oh, I'm totally going to do that.
Right. I mean, the music bits were pretty fun, but the rest of it was just like a bunch of green. It was like green.
Okay,
green,
I'll
green.
Be guitar. Norm can be drums. Come on, everybody.
the game's basically what Guitar Hero would be if it was combined with Wipeout. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's awesome.
The whole merging of the senses.
Norm, you're good at this kind of thing. Can you succinctly sort of summarize what the deal is with this game?
With this game? Having not really played it yet? Not really.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, it's like, you know, it's like a very PC kind of Guitar Hero where you can use your own MP3s that produce these sort of blocks of light that come at you.
Well, and dynamic tracks, too.
It's like F-Zero.
Track changes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see it like the visualization kind of things you get on Winamp or iTunes or something like that. You know, where
interactive.
Where it takes the music and based on the sound waves or the representations of the sound waves, it does like fractal art or something like that. This converts that into like a racetrack where with kind of obstacles in the way, or not really obstacles, but pickups that you can grab and create almost like Tetris like formations with.
It's a block stacking rhythm racer,
right?
Nice. That was incredible improv.
Create a new genre.
For me though, I played it for a little while. It's kind of interesting, but I'm not that into it just because I have no sense of rhythm. For the same reason I don't get into Rock Band or anything else, I just have no rhythm whatsoever. So it has very limited appeal for me. But I definitely appreciate the
concept. It's because your inner child is dead, Dan. I mean, let's face it.
Your child has no rhythm. That's the problem. It's not dead. It just has no rhythm. My inner child cannot dance. Any more than my outer child.
We don't need to see any more of your outer child, man.
Okay. Well, all right. So everybody has homework to do for this weekend. It's all about audio surf.
But only if you have rhythm.
I don't think you really need rhythm.
I don't have rhythm, and so that's why I play alone.
Yeah, it's like a racetrack, and then you're like trying to gather the blocks, and the blocks are really just generated by the beats, but you don't have to like hit anything on the beat necessarily. So
yeah, is there multiplayer? Is there a multiplayer mode in that game? I haven't explored enough yet to know.
You can say beat my score, and then now it's okay. Multiplayer. I don't know.
What's the best song that you've played with the game so far?
That's a good one. Because
the music definitely makes a big difference in the experience. Yeah. Like if you play a little Bach, then you're probably not going to have a good time.
Somebody does this song. It's called Weapons of Mass Distortion. Who does that?
It's called Mass Distortion, Fatboy Slim?
No, Weapons of Mass Distortion. It's a nice, chunky song. Crystal Method, that's it.
Bass, right.
Yeah. Techno's good.
Yeah, things that are bass heavy. A lot of synth.
Yeah, and it's just like, yeah, it's to me, it's like the ultimate mecha song, you know, because it's just got this big stomping rhythm. And I see all these people being squashed beneath huge metal feet.
See, I loaded up some Air after I had played Call of Duty the other night and was pretty cranked
nice.
Up. And it was like super soothing and kind of mellow, and you know, it was good. It was good.
I think listeners should go check out podcastfantastic.com, which is all of Jeremy's music that he used to use and we still use for all the podcasts. Load those up. Have a blast.
Excellent. Good call. Good call.
Why wasn't I told about this? Podcastfantastic.com. Holy moly.
Do you listen to the podcast, Logan?
I didn't know about Podcast Fantastic.
I've been forgetting to plug it. There's my plug.
Nice.
Yeah.
One of the cool things I saw at GDC was this contour reality capture for facial animation. You can get it at MOVA.com, MOVA.com. I guess MOVA.com/technology.php. Let's see if you can just get to it from MOVA.com. I just Googled it and got to this. Let's see. Yeah, okay. So if you go to MOVA.com, MOVA.com, there's a new contour in action video. There are a few of these different ones that have popped up, and it's really, really good. Just facial animation. They've got a few videos of this bald guy, just very expressive. They've got him like reading a few like lines and like different accents and things like that, and you know all the facial wrinkles and everything, and it's all being done in real time.
Is it motion capture, because that's what it looks like? It's this photo real surface capture on the website. It's a new form of capture for facial animation, right?
Yeah, it's rendered in real time, but I think they did use motion capture.
Right. Okay.
So it's different from what Valve did with their system and source, where you can just enter an audio file and it'll automatically generate the animation procedurally.
Right. This is not something you'll be able to do at home like that. This is something that, you know, will just, like, if they implement something like this in a game, it will just dramatically improve the quality of facial animations.
And the neat thing is when they do the capture, you don't have to have all the little dots on your face. So you just sit the person in front of a camera, is my understanding.
Yeah, it says preparation is completed in under an hour. The actor's skin is sponged with an FDA-approved phosphofluorescent makeup, either alone or mixed with skin tone-based color. Cloth can be treated with a phosphoretic dye or phosphorescent dye. So basically, it's got to be an IR kind of thing, infrared detection kind of thing. So the camera picks up like every movement, like a high-resolution camera picks up every.
I wonder if it's like that. If it's like that depth cam we saw a few months ago, the I don't know if we get right. Can we talk about that?
Well, that was also at GDC. I saw that. Yeah, on the floor.
I mean, you were saying earlier this week, Dan, that you noticed a lot of new companies at GDC this year showing off motion capture and different.
Not necessarily motion capture, but you know, user interface kind of things using infrared cameras and you know motion sensing. We had seen this thing demoed for us a couple months ago that we couldn't talk about then, but now it was on the floor of GDC, so it's fine to talk about. Where it's a camera that has both normal webcam kind of thing, plus an IR camera. They can detect how far away from the camera you are, down to like your fingertip. So you can hold up two fingers, and it will identify each fingertip, allowing you to do kind of like the iPhone interface, you know, the touch kind of thing, but without a surface. So
Minority Report was what I immediately thought of, you know, with right. The twisting, the moving, and the sweeping, and all that stuff.
I was just astounded that it worked.
Yeah, so was I. I've seen so many of those that didn't work, and yeah. I was just like, wow. You were there, Logan. I mean, we were both like, holy shit, I can't. Oh,
I mean, yeah, it actually worked, just like you thought it would.
Shocked.
Yeah. But they had several different versions of that, and I saw one in particular that had like a clip on for your headset, like you know any gaming headset for that'll track your IR. Like it's got an IR camera that you put on top of your monitor, and it keeps track of your head position. So you know you can look side to side. It was like that thing that the guy did with the Wii remote mod. Right. So you can move your head around. You can see all you know. You can look side to side, and it'll you know pan side to side. Like they had a demo with a cockpit of a helicopter. So you're sitting in the cockpit, and you turn your head to the side, and it looks to the side. I mean, you'll turn your head like 10 degrees, and it'll turn like 30 degrees. So you're still looking at the screen, but you look side to side. And one of the really cool things about it is they had it set up so that if you moved your head a little bit closer to the screen, it would zoom in on the control panel. So it's like you're leaning in to look at it. That was really
cool. That's one of those things that sounds cool, but I think in practice it'd be really annoying. Yeah, you have to keep leaning closer and closer until your eyeballs are resting on the screen.
Well, I mean that's only if they really didn't do that well, if they didn't you know test it to make sure you don't get annoyed. Like
I guess
if you just move a little bit closer.
It is extra realistic because if you bend over to barf, you actually I mean in real life you will get closer to the console. So
I tried it out. It was cool.
Did any of you guys try the brain control the brain powered controller thing?
No, I didn't see that one.
But we are going to take a look at it later. What did you think?
I didn't get to I didn't get to play with it because the line was really long and I had a meeting to go to. But
luckily they're right here in the Bay Area. So,
oh, cool. Yeah, I mean it looked interesting. Gordon brought up in our show the fear that you'd sit down in front of it, they'd hook it up, and then like nothing would happen. Be like, wow, this is unfortunate. What happened to you?
Never happened.
What's wrong with you, man? You're having some sort of brain problem. But yeah, I mean I wouldn't have thought about that. But now when they bring it in here and we have to sit down and plug it in, I'm going to be terrified.
That what an awkward moment that'll be. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Mouth breather.
I want the one that works the other way, where you know I can put it on somebody's head and then control them.
But, right. That's the other fear, right? Is that you know if it can read, then it can probably also write. So yeah. Well.
Yeah. I don't think it works that way.
Our alien overlords will be using this technology to communicate with us. So.
I for one welcome them.
Mm. You know what? If I can do a 3-day work week, I'm fine. Anyone can take over from any planet. Okay, before we move on to listener questions, anybody else have anything they'd like to bring up from the week before? Yes, please, Mr. Stapleton, bring it on.
Just to follow up from a week or so ago, we talked about like the presidential candidates and you know their positions on games. I saw this post on Kotaku this week that kind of annoyed me. The post is titled "Obama Sees Gamers as Underachievers," and you know they're saying, oh, you know, he's you know saying that Obama's bad mouthing gamers and you know he's anti game or whatever, and that kind of annoyed me because the actual quote which they do put in the post here says in his victory speech in Wisconsin, Obama said, "I know how hard it will be to alleviate poverty that has built up over the centuries, how hard it will be to fix schools, because changing our schools will require not just money, but a change in attitudes. We're going to have to parent better, turn off the television set and put away the video games, and instill a sense of excellence in our children, and that's going to take time." Now, come on. Let's not go picking fights where there isn't one. He's not saying that games are bad. I mean, that's just silly. Come on, and He's saying, yeah, it would be helpful if people would, you know, spend less time with, you know, just, you know, entertaining themselves and go out and be productive. That's perfectly true, and that's a reasonable argument to make. And it's not an anti-video game thing. He's not saying he's going to outlaw game, or, you know, say he's going to do what China does and limit the number of hours you can spend in games. He's saying, hey, parents, you know, take some responsibility for your kids, which is exactly what we want parents to do, is take responsibility for what your kids play, how much your kids play. Don't expect the government to do it for you. That's not an anti-game statement. So it just bugs me that, you know, that the, you know, anybody would go out and find, you know, pick a fight where there isn't one with a politician who isn't anti-game.
Yeah, that's but what the internet's I pay about, way too much in taxes to be asked to be take responsibility for anything. I mean, that's just like, you know, take one or the other, you know, geez. Mm. Thank you very much. We've cleared the air. I think we all know Mrs. Clinton's position on that, and we'll just go right on by that one and go directly to the listener questions. Andy, bring them on.
All right.
Hey, guys, Too Skinny in Sacramento. Just had a comment with regards to, I guess it was the Valentine's Day podcast and console games being better, getting more attention than PC games, and kind of PC games fizzling. It occurred to me that part of the barrier might be the average consumer sees the normal cost associated with buying a computer as a barrier to entering in those games, especially when similar games or a lot of the games now are on the consoles as well. And I think that's probably just obviously a stigma or stereotype associated with the PC is the cost, when obviously there's superior games being produced for it, but people are content to pay less and get lesser quality games and have it be on a console. So anyways, that's just my thought. Wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
A lot of what you're paying for on a console is ease of use, and you know, just being able to put something in and play, and it's all been standardized for that, and you know, it might not be as deep or complex a game as you can play on the PC, but that doesn't mean it's not entertaining. So, and you know, that's fine for a lot of people. For me, I like a more complex game. I also like I enjoy building my PCs. I enjoy tweaking them and getting the most out of it. So I prefer the PC and. You know, really, I was just, you know, discussing with some people the cost of building a PC, which that could play games as well as an Xbox or a PS3, and it's just not that expensive anymore. It's if you're building it from the ground up, you can build a PC that would rival an Xbox actually technically exceed an Xbox for less than $500. If you already have some of the pieces, the price just goes down from there.
I mean, in fairness, the $500 PC isn't going to give you what I would describe as a good gaming experience. Well, I mean, it'll have the same hardware as the Xbox, more or less, but it's not going to perform at the same level. But, I mean, we also have, I mean, not to plug my magazine, but our next issue is how to build a no-compromises $1,500 PC. And, I mean, for $1,500, which is not that expensive when you're talking about buying a new PC, I mean, you can build a machine that'll run Crysis or anything that's coming out next year at your monitor's native resolution and look really nice. So,
I mean, and at the same time, have this tool that basically we all use every day and need. unlike a console, you know, which is limited in its in what it can do for you.
Yeah, but
of course, on the other hand, they have Peggle on the Xbox now. So I mean, maybe we should just all
fuck
it in.
It's over.
I was talking a few weeks ago, Will, about the machine I rebuilt for a friend of mine. You know, he had a computer that I had actually handed down to him like 4 years ago. That was was barely getting by. He couldn't play anything new. So I just took the case, the DVD drive, and we had the monitor, the mouse, the keyboard, and I think we kept the power supply. Yeah, and we just got a new motherboard, new CPU, new RAM. And new graphics card for less than $250 after rebate, and the graphics card was a bare bones like 8400, which could play Portal and it could play all of Orange Box just fine.
Of course,
that was $250.
I mean, and if you're doing that kind of thing, then if you're looking, I mean, one of my favorite things to do is the motherboard, CPU, memory, video card upgrade. And the nice thing is if you have a DDR2 system now, you can probably get away with just the motherboard, CPU, video card upgrade because you'll already have memory that works. I mean, you can get a really great gaming experience with not too expensive parts. So.
Right, and like a CPU and motherboard you can get for less than $200 that's going to be a mid-range Core 2 Duo. Plus, they just came out with NVIDIA, the GeForce 9600, which is like they're shooting for around $200 with that.
Once they're actually going a little less than MSRP, so that's nice.
Right, so that's a top performing card for not tip top, but a high performing card for $200.
I mean, honestly, if you look at it, okay, you can get 4 gigs of DDR2 for $100 right now. You can get an inexpensive motherboard for $120, $130. You can get a cheap quad-core Intel processor for $250 because the QX6600s are really cheap now. And you can get a 8800 GT board for what? What do those cost? Like $250, $280? So you're looking at what, like $700, $750 for a really top-notch gaming machine.
Right.
Assuming you already have a hard drive, optical drive. That's what she called our system building company, right? The PC Gamers, PC Gaming Alliance.
So let's take one more question, Andy, before we move on.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. Chris here, longtime reader, newer listener. I agree with Kristen Salvatore's last statement, last podcast, about every new RTS being the one she thinks is going to reinvent her interest in RTS games, and none of them seeming to work for her. Well, I've actually picked up Company of Heroes and Supreme Commander on sale recently, and both are absolutely phenomenal. Haven't finished either, but I'm extremely mod hungry, so even though I find Dan Stapleton to be the most annoying member of the podcast, he's like the Jeff Gordon of PC Gamer. You either hate him or you love him. I'd love to know if he has any good mod resources or sites or favorite mods for those two particular games. Thanks a lot. Keep up the great work.
What was that?
You shouldn't even
backhand,
answer.
Backhand.
No, I'm not sure
then,
I want to help.
Yeah. Be the better man, Dan. Be the bigger man.
My mod advice. Although, for those two games, let's see, I haven't really looked into mods for Company of Heroes just because, first of all, it's great to begin with, and second of all, I think all the mods I've even heard of that are just making it more super realistic and less for my money.
What are you saying? There are no Star Trek mods.
I want to play the Team Fortress mod for Company of Heroes.
You know what?
Send your scout out to the point.
Awesome. Yeah, right. Get some rip lighting and fong shading.
Right. Exactly.
For Supreme Commander, I'm actually really disappointed in the mod community didn't take off with that. There are a few mods, but when it came out, I was like, it's going to be like a week before we see like a Star Wars mod with AT-ATs and AT-STs stomping around. But that never seemed to happen. Those two games, I can't really recommend any mods specifically, unfortunately. But they are both fantastic games, and he's absolutely right with that. He's totally wrong that I'm annoying, though.
Sins is a great RTS, too. Not that you guys haven't talked about Sins enough.
Yeah, Sins is really fun.
Sins is fantastic, and there are lots of mods already in the works for that. So once you finish...
Star Trek or Star Wars oriented, I believe, right?
There are a couple of those, and there are like a lot of other ones too. Once you finish SUPCOM and Company of Heroes, I highly recommend that you move on to that one. It's got a lot in common with SUPCOM,
with the
Zoom and the mass numbers of units, but it's slower paced and more strategic, really.
You should find him online and beat him up.
I would go to his house.
You'd be like Jane Silent Bob.
It is you.
So, listeners, wouldn't it be great to hear your own voice on the PC Gamer podcast? Wouldn't it be even better if you got to ask a question and one of the hosts or celebrity guests answered your question on the air? Well, it can happen. Just send your question in MP3 format to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. That's PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337, extension 724, and record your question there. And remember to keep it brief, clean, and generally pleasant, without insulting the nice people who host your podcast. You can also be part of the insanely fun PC Gamer family by subscribing to PC Gamer Magazine. Just head on over to www.pcgamer.com/subscribe. The reason you're hearing this abrupt cut back into conversation is because Dan just said something unbelievably vulgar and rude, and so we had to cut that part out. And I'm jumping back in here to talk about playlists. Whoa, I'm still kind of flipping out on that.
It'll be
one.
Be in the outtakes,
wow.
Right?
Oh yeah,
that was. Does NC-17 even cover that, or is it just beyond? Anyway,
I don't know if it was that bad.
I'm still hobbling through Rainbow Six Vegas. Which is, you know, to my shame. Does anyone else find this to be as hard as I do? Or
don't you?
You know, Will had a problem with it, right? There were some parts that
me.
You could,
are you unrealistic or what?
No, yeah, I'm just finding it hard. It's difficult.
I'll tell you exactly why. The auto save checkpoint system. If you could quick save, it'd probably be a lot easier.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I had one place that I had to repeat about 400 times, but I was playing unrealistic, so.
Yeah, realistic is hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, Will, what you been playing lately?
I've been playing Sins and Team Fortress 2 and Call of Duty. Pretty much.
Oh, yeah,
Sins,
obviously,
Sins.
Team Fortress 2.
I mean, Sins is good for like 5 hours anytime I sit down, so I try to avoid playing it that often. Team Fortress remains awesome. I mean, everybody, we have a server together, PC Gamer and Maximum PC in a shared alliance, so I'm sure you guys have plugged that a lot. But, yeah. That's pretty much what I've been
thinking. At what time at night will you no longer start a Sims game?
Oh, I don't play Sims on weeknights anymore. School nights, there's no Sims.
That's a lie.
No, I was off work on Tuesday. That's why Monday was a Sims day.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Dan, what have you been playing this week?
Lots of Sims for my free time. I've been playing a lot of stuff for preview and review, though, so haven't gotten as much time in as I would have liked, but...
What's the cutoff hour for you for Sins?
There really is.
He starts games at like 1:30. I mean,
I have done.
You have no soul, man.
I sincerely regretted that. That was an accident.
Right, Dan is like, hey, it's like 11:45. He's like, hey, you want to play a quick game of Sins? What do you say to that? No, leave me alone. It's a trap.
Hey, in my defense, I think Norm initiated that one actually.
That's not good.
I don't think that I had the, you know, quite that lapse of judgment to actually initiate the game. My lapse of judgment was in participating. Like, sure, well, that Norm, sounds like a great idea.
Norm, I know you've had a busy week. You've been juggling 1,000 things, but I cannot believe you haven't played anything. What have you been playing?
Team Fortress 2.
Nice.
More Team Fortress 2 on our server, and I'm going to pimp it right now. It's pcgmaxpc.nuclearfallout.net.
And we have a secret team coming, right? Oh, we can't talk about that here.
Oh,
no,
no, no. We can't talk about anything.
Yeah, forget that.
So is that a different server than the Maximum PC PC Gamer Experience? Or is it the same server?
It's the same one.
It's the same one.
Oh, okay, word. Yeah, I've been playing TF2 as well a little bit, and Sins, and Sam and Max. That's it.
And what's your cutoff for Sims? Cutoff hour?
Oh, 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Ah!
That's fine, though, because if you start at 7 o'clock, you'll finish at midnight.
Yeah, it's perfect.
We I need to add you to my Steam friends list, Andy. I don't have you on there, I don't think.
Okay. Bloody man. I'm in the group. Both Steam groups. So.
That's a wrap for this week. I hope you all have had as much fun as I have, and I'd like to thank Will Smith from Maximum PC and not that other guy for joining us. Thank you, Will.
Thanks for having me.
And for the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is Logan Decker saying thanks for listening, and please join us next week for an extremely special Leap Year's Eve podcast.
Is next week's podcast actually going to be extremely special?
No.
It's Leap Year's Eve.
All of them are special.
Okay. Interesting. Right. Okay.
All podcasts are special, just like children.
It's like a very special episode of Blossom.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing.
Well,
but does that mean we're going to get our periods then? Is that...
Dan, always one step too far.
Really?
I
thought that was the definition of a very special episode of Blossom.
Holy moly.
Over the line.
Isn't that what
over
that is?
Yeah, like
it didn't have to end that way.
Deserves a plot. Mine, at the same
lines
time.
Lines are made to be crossed, Will.
Wow. That line wasn't just crossed, it was violated repeatedly. It was a guest star on Oz. It's not good.
Okay.
I think he meant the Wikipedia, don't you?
It sounded like he was slumped on the floor, you know, with the phone just kind of leaning on his mouth.
It reminded me of Requiem for a Dream for no reason.
Yeah, exactly.
Was somebody shouting ass to ass?
Oh, I think I had some.
Oh, damn, man.
I held back. I want everyone to note.
Way to push it over the top.
Back.
Oh, yeah, he did update the Wikipedia.
Is that what he's talking? Okay.
Yeah. He spelled multimedia with two cap M's.
He spelled what wrong? Wow.
Did he get my name
division.
Right? Just kidding. I don't really care.
No, he misspelled. You're Bauman, right?
Oh, yeah. Everybody spells
spelled
it that
you
way.
Like Frank from. Like the guy from 2001, yeah.
Whatever.
Awesome.
So no, dude, you spelled my name wrong. Thanks a lot.
I don't think we can use this segment.
This is merely cat adequate.
I like that. Okay.
Hey, is
all
Norm
right,
there?
Start.
Norm, are you here?
Oh, I'm here. You know what? I was muted the entire time.
Oh, what's up, dude?
Usually when Alien Overlords take over, it's not like, oh, hey, guys, take a four-day weekend. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, into the salt mines.
Logan will be fine working a three-day week in the salt mines.
During
the negotiation
process, we can talk. We can say, you know, look, it's a nice planet. We can all share. I just don't want to work all that much.
We want your water.
They're probably going to be eating our kidneys and stuff. Oof.
Right.
Well, there's lots of water in your kidneys.
Right? Yeah.
They'll be allergic to water. Have you seen time?
Swing away, Andy. Swing away.
Oh, my God. Now you made me remember a horrible experience.